spear, the bulk of his body outside the tent and vulnerable to anyone who happened to pass. It was taking his eyes much too long to adjust, and he could not risk being discovered by a chance passerby at this stage. So he risked moving a few feet farther, slipping his stocky frame through the opening and into the dark shelter of the tent. The labored breathing and the snores continued undisturbed, and there was the occasional sound of a heavy body shifting position somewhere in the darkness beyond him. But no one awoke. Flick remained crouched just inside the long slit for more endless minutes, his eyes working madly to distinguish the faint shapes of men, tables, and baggage against the blackness of the night. It seemed to take forever. But at last he was able to discern the huddled forms of sleeping men scattered about the floor of the tent, their bodies rolled tightly in the warmth of their blankets. To his astonishment, he realized that one motionless form lay slumbering only inches in front of his balanced body. Had he attempted to crawl any farther before his eyes had adjusted to this darkness, he would have stumbled onto and undoubtedly awakened the sleeper. The old sensation of fear returned sharply, and for a moment he fought back against a rising sense of panic that commanded him to turn and run. He could feel the sweat sliding down his crouched body beneath the water-soaked clothing, tracing thin, searching paths over the heated skin as his labored breathing became more ragged. At that moment, he was aware of his every feeling, his mind pushed right to the brink of collapse. Yet later, he would recall nothing of these feelings. Mercifully, they would be blocked from his memory, and all that would remain would be one sharp picture etched indelibly in his brain of the sleeping troll Matarins and the object of his search. Eventine. Flick spotted him quickly, the lean form no longer seated upright in the wooden chair at the corner of the heavy tapestry, but lying on the canvas floor only a few feet from the poised veilman, the dark eyes open and watching. Flick had judged his point of entry correctly, and now he moved cat-like to the king's side, the hunting knife severing quickly the taut ropes that bound hands and feet. In an instant, the elf was free, and the two shadowy figures were moving quickly to reach the vertical opening in the side of the tent. Eventine paused momentarily to pick something up from the side of one of the sleeping trolls. Flick did not wait to see what the elf had seized, but hastened through the slit into the misty darkness beyond. Once outside, he crouched silently next to the tent, glancing anxiously about for any sign of movement. But there was only the persistent drizzle of the rain breaking the night's deep silence. Seconds later, the canvas parted again, and the elven king passed through and hunched down beside his rescuer. He was carrying an all-weather poncho and a broadsword. As he wrapped himself in the cloak, he paused momentarily and smiled grimly at a frightened but elated Flick, then gripped his hand in warm, unspoken gratitude. The veilman grinned back in satisfaction and nodded. So Eventine Elicidal was rescued, snatched from the very teeth of the sleeping enemy. It was Flick Ohmsford's finest moment. He felt now that the worst was over, that once clear of the great matter intent with Eventine a free man, escape from the camp could never be denied them. He had not even thought to look beyond his entry into the troll commander's quarters. Now the moment to look ahead was there, but as the two paused in the shadows, the moment passed and was lost. From out of nowhere strolled three fully armed troll sentries, who instantly spotted the two figures crouching at the side of the Matarin tent. For an instant everyone froze. Then slowly Eventine rose, standing directly in front of the tear in the canvas. To Flick's astonishment, the quick-thinking elven king waved the three over to them, speaking fluently in their own language. Hesitantly, the sentries approached, their long pikes lowered carelessly as they heard the familiar sound of their own tongue. Eventine stepped aside to reveal the gaping slit, nodding warningly to Flick as the unsuspecting trolls now rushed forward. The terrified veilman stepped away, his hand gripping the short hunting knife beneath his cloak. As the trolls reached them, their eyes still momentarily fastened on the torn canvas, the elven king struck out with the broadsword. Two of the trolls were silenced before they had a chance to defend themselves, their throats cut away. The final sentry got off a quick cry for help and slashed wildly at Eventine, cutting into the exposed flesh of the elf's shoulder. Then he too fell lifeless into the muddied earth. For a moment, there was silence once more. Flick stood white-faced against the tent wall, staring in fright at the dead trolls as the wounded elven king tried vainly to stem the blood flow from his slashed shoulder. Then they heard the sharp sound of voices from close by. "Which way?" Eventine whispered harshly, the bloodied sword still tightly clenched in his good hand. In mute silence, the little veilman rushed to the elf's side and pointed into the darkness behind him. The voices grew louder now, coming from more than one direction, and swiftly, wordlessly, the two fugitives fled from the troll sleeping quarters. Stumbling between the fog-shrouded tents and baggage, unable to find their footing on the water-soaked grasslands and blinded by the darkness and the rolling mist, the two struggled to outdistance their pursuers. The voices faded to either side of them and then fell behind, only to rise sharply in alarm within seconds as the bodies of the sentries were discovered. The two dashed on as the deep, haunting sound of a troll battle horn shattered the night sleep of the Northland army, and everywhere men awoke to the call to arms and battle. Flick was in the lead, frantically trying to remember the quickest way back to the camp perimeter. He was running blindly now, terrified beyond reason, his one thought to gain the safety of the silent darkness beyond this hateful camp. Struggling painfully to keep up with the veilman, his shoulder bleeding freely from the pike wound, Eventine realized what had happened to his young rescuer and called vainly after him, trying to warn him to be careful. Too late. The words had just left his mouth when they ran headlong into a band of still groggy Northlanders who had been abruptly awakened by the battle horn's blast. Everyone went down in a tangle of arms and legs, both parties completely caught by surprise and unable to avoid the collision. Flick felt the hunting cloak ripped from his body as he was kicked and buffeted by unseen hands and feet, and in maddened terror he fought back, slashing wildly with the hunting knife at anything that came within reach. Howls of pain and fury went up from his attackers, and for an instant the arms and legs drew back and he was free again. He leaped to his feet, only to be borne back a moment later by a renewed assault. He caught the dull flash of a sweeping sword blade as it whisked past his unprotected head, and his own knife came up to ward off the blow. For several minutes, everything became chaotic as the veilman rolled and thrashed his way through the clinging hands and heavy bodies, the fog-bound night a maze of wild cries and scuffling figures. He was cut and battered unmercifully as he sought to fight his way clear, sometimes forced back to the earth, but always rebounding within seconds and struggling onward, calling sharply for Eventine. What he did not realize was that he had stumbled into a band of unarmed Northlanders who were caught completely by surprise when he charged madly into them, wielding the hunting knife. For several minutes they sought to pin him down and disarm him, but the terrified veilman struggled so violently that they were unable to contain him. Eventine rushed quickly to his aid, battling his way through the mass of attackers to reach the youth, and at last they gave way entirely, scattering for the safety of the darkness. Quickly downing the last persistent Northlander, a rather large gnome who had fastened himself bodily to the struggling Flick, the elven king grabbed his rescuer by the tunic collar and hauled him to his feet. The veilman continued to struggle violently for a moment more. Then realizing who held him, he abruptly relaxed, his heart beating wildly. All around him the sounds of the Northland battle horns blasted in deafening tones through the camp, mingling with the rising cries of the aroused army. Vainly he tried to listen to what the other was saying, his battered head still ringing from the blows struck. "Find the quickest way out. Don't run. Walk steadily but unhurriedly. Running will just call attention to us. Now go. Eventine's words died into the darkness as his strong hand gripped Flick's shoulder and turned him about. Their eyes locked momentarily, but the Veilmen could only meet the Elven King's piercing stare for an instant, feeling it burn right through to his frightened heart. Then they were moving toward the perimeter of the awakened encampment, side by side, their weapons held ready. Flick was thinking rapidly but clearly now, recalling vague landmarks within the Northland camp that indicated he was proceeding in the right direction. The fear was momentarily buried as a cold sense of determination gripped him, fostered in part by the strong presence striding quietly at his side. It might have been Alanon himself, so unshakable was the confidence that the Elven King radiated. Dozens of the enemy rushed past them, some coming within several feet, but no one stopped them or spoke to them. Unmolested, the two men passed quietly through the chaos that had engulfed the Northlanders at the unexpected call to battle, moving steadily toward the sentry lines surrounding the encampment. The cries continued from within, although they were dropping behind the fugitives little by little. The rains had momentarily ceased altogether, but the heavy mist continued unbroken, shrouding the entire grasslands from the Strelaheim to the Myrmidon. Flick glanced once at his silent companion, noticing with concern that the lean figure was bent slightly in pain, the left arm hanging limp and bleeding freely. The valiant elf was tiring rapidly, growing steadily weaker from loss of blood, his face pale and drawn from the effort to stay on his feet. Unconsciously, Flick slowed the pace, walking closer to his companion in case he should stumble. They reached the camp perimeter within a very short time. So quickly, in fact, that the word of what had taken place at the Matarin headquarters had not yet reached the sentries. But the battle horn had put them on the alert, and they stood close to the encampment in small groups, their weapons ready. Ironically, they believed that the danger lay from an enemy outside the camp. Their eyes were fastened dutifully away from the camp, permitting Eventine and Flick to approach undetected to the very edge of their lines. The Elven King did not hesitate, moving forward between the outposts at a steady walk, trusting to the darkness, the mist, and the confusion to prevent their discovery. Time was running out. Within a matter of minutes, the entire army would be mobilized and ready for battle, and once it was discovered that he had managed to escape, trackers would be out searching for him. He would find safety if he could reach the borders of Kern, just to the south, or, alternatively, if he could reach the concealment of the Dragon's Teeth and surrounding forests to the east. It would take several hours in either case, and his strength was fading. He could not pause now, even if it meant risking almost certain discovery by passing into the open unprotected. Boldly, the two strolled directly between two of the sentry parties, looking neither left nor right as they moved into the emptiness of the open grasslands beyond. They succeeded in not calling attention to themselves until they were past the perimeter of the guard lines. Suddenly, several of the sentries caught sight of them at the same moment and called out. Eventine turned slightly and waved with his good arm, calling back in the troll language, all the while maintaining a steady pace as he moved farther into the darkness. Flick followed warily, waiting expectantly as the sentries stared after them, still undecided. Then abruptly one of them called sharply and began to move after them, waving them back in excited motions. Eventine yelled to Flick to run for it, and the chase was on. As the two men raced for safety, close to 20 guards took up the pursuit, brandishing their pikes and yelling wildly. It was an uneven contest from the beginning. Both Eventine and Flick were of lighter build and under normal circumstances could have outdistanced their pursuers. But the elf was wounded badly and weakened from loss of blood, while the little Veilman was physically exhausted from the ordeal of the last 2 days. The pursuers were fresh and strong, well-rested and fed. Flick knew that their only hope was to find concealment in the mist and darkness, hoping their enemies would be unable to find them. Breathing harshly, Stumbling with labored strides, they pushed their failing bodies to the limits of physical endurance. Everything became a large black blur made up of rolling mist all about them and the slickness of the grasslands beneath their racing feet. They ran until they thought they could run no farther, and still there were no mountains, no forests, no place to hide. Abruptly, from out of the darkness ahead of them, there flashed an iron-tipped pike, piercing Eventine's cloak and pinning him to the damp earth. The outer perimeter of sentries, Flick thought in horror. He had forgotten about them. A dim form shot out of the mist, hurtling itself on the fallen elf. With the last of his waning strength, the wounded king twisted sharply to one side to avoid the sword blade that buried itself in the earth next to his head, at the same instant bringing his own weapon around and up. The rushing figure fell forward with a quick gasp, impaled on the blade. Flick stood rooted in place, staring wildly about for other attackers. But there had only been the lone sentry. Quickly he rushed to his companion's side, wrenching the pike free and pulling the exhausted elf to his feet with almost superhuman effort. Eventine took a few steps before collapsing to the ground once more. Fearfully, the Veilman dropped to his knees beside him, trying to shake the man awake. "No. No, I'm finished," the hoarse reply came at last. "I can go no farther." Behind them, the cries of the Northlanders shot out of the darkness. Their pursuers were drawing closer. Again Flick tried in vain to pull the limp form to its feet, but this time there was no response at all. Helplessly the Veilman stared into the darkness about him, the short hunting knife held ready. This was the end. In final desperation he called wildly into the darkness and the mist. "Alanon! Alanon!" The call died quickly into the night. The rain had begun once more, falling in a slow drizzle onto an already oversaturated earth to form still larger puddles and mires on the quiet grasslands. Dawn was no more than an hour away, although it was impossible to tell time in such weather as this. Flick crouched silently next to the unconscious elven king and listened to the sounds of the men closing in about him. He could tell by their voices that they were drawing nearer, though they still had not seen him. As if to further mock the futility of the situation, he realized that after risking everything to free Eventine, he had still failed to learn what had befallen the missing Shay. Sudden shouts from his left brought him about to face dim figures approaching from out of the fog. They had found him. Grimly, he rose to meet them. An instant later, the hazy darkness between them exploded in a blinding flash of fire that seemed to erupt from out of the earth, the terrific force throwing Flick to the ground, leaving him dazed and blinded. Showers of sparks and burning grass fell all about him, and the thunder of a long series of explosions shook the ground violently. One instant the Northlanders were shadowy figures caught in the dazzling light, and the next they disappeared altogether. Columns of crackling flame shot upward into the night like giant pillars, thrusting through the darkness and fog to reach the heavens. Squinting into the maelstrom of destruction, Flick thought it was the end of the world. For several endless minutes, the wall of fire blazed skyward in unabated fury, tearing the earth into blackened chunks, scorching the night air until the heat began to burn Flick's skin. Then with a final flash of surging energy, it flared up brightly and disappeared into a hush of mingled smoke and steam, blending quickly into the mist and rain until all that remained was the intense heat of the night air, drifting slowly to rest. Flick rose cautiously to one knee and peered into the emptiness before him, then turned sharply as he sensed rather than heard the approach of someone behind him. From out of the rolling mist and steam emerged a giant black form, cloaked in flowing robes and reaching outward as if it were the angel of death come to claim her own. Flex stared in numbed terror and then started in recognition as the awesome form passed before him. It was the Dark Wanderer come at last. It was Al-Anon. Chapter 28. Dawn had just broken with dazzling brightness against a cloudless, deep blue sky as the last band of refugees from the island city of Kern passed through the gates of the great outer wall and entered Tirsis. Gone was the damp, impenetrable mist and the vast, dark ceiling of storm clouds that had blanketed the land of Callahorn for so many days. The grasslands remained soggy and sprinkled with small ponds the saturated earth could not yet manage to absorb, but the persistent rains had moved on to be replaced by a fresh sky and sun that brought a new cheerfulness to the morning. The people of Kern had been arriving in scattered groups for several hours, all weary, horrified by what had happened and frightened of what lay ahead. Their home had been completely destroyed, though some did not yet realize the Northlanders had put everything to the torch following the unexpected attack on their encampment. The evacuation of the doomed city had been a miraculous success, and although their homes were gone, they were still alive and, for the moment, secure. The Northlanders had failed to detect the mass escape, their attention completely occupied by the courageous band of Legion soldiers that had assaulted the central camp and drawn them away from even the most distant outposts in the mistaken belief that a full-scale attack was underway. By the time they realized the strike was only a feint designed to confuse them, the island had been evacuated and its people were far down the swift Myrmidon and beyond the reach of the maddened enemy. Minyan Lee was one of the last to enter the walled city, his lean frame battered and exhausted. The wounds on his feet had been reopened during the 10-mile march from the Myrmidon to Tirsis, but he had refused to be carried. It was with the last of his strength that he struggled up the wide ramp leading to the gates of the outer wall, supported on one side by the faithful Shurl, who would refuse to leave his side even to sleep, and gripped firmly on the other by an equally weary Janus Senpre. The youthful Legion commander had survived the fighting of that terrible night battle, escaping the besieged island on the same small raft that had carried Menyan and Shurl. The ordeal they had been through had brought them closer together, and on the trip southward they had spoken frankly, though in hushed tones, about the disbanding of the Border Legion. They were in complete accord that if the city of Tirsis were to withstand an assault by a force the size of the Northland army, the Legion would be needed. Moreover, only the missing Balinor possessed the battle knowledge and skill necessary to lead them. The prince must be found quickly and placed in command, even though his brother would undoubtedly oppose such a move, just as he was certain to oppose the reforming of the legendary fighting force he had so foolishly demobilized. Neither the Highlander nor the Legion commander realized at this moment how difficult their task would be, though they suspected that Balinor had been seized by his brother upon entering Tirsis some days earlier. Nevertheless, they were resolved that Tirsis would not be destroyed as easily as Kern. This time, they would stand and fight. A squad of black-clad palace guards met the little group just inside the gates of the city, extending warm greetings from the king and insisting that they come to him at once. When Janus Senpre remarked that he had heard the king was deathly ill and confined to his bed, the squad captain quickly, though somewhat belatedly, added that his son Palance extended the offer in his father's place. Nothing could have pleased Menyan more. He was anxious to get inside the palace walls for a look around. Forgotten was the fatigue and pain, though his companions still stood close to offer their support. The squad captain signaled to the guards near the inner wall, and an ornate carriage was quickly brought up to convey the privileged party to the palace. Menyan and Shurl climbed into the carriage, but Janus Senpre declined to accompany them, explaining that he wished first to see to the welfare of his soldiers in the vacant Legion barracks. With disarming warmth, he promised he would join them later. As the carriage drew away to the inner wall, the youthful commander waved once in sharp salute to Menyon, his face impassive. Then, accompanied by the grizzled Fandres and several select officers, he strode purposefully toward the Legion barracks. In the coach, Menyon smiled faintly to himself and gripped Shirl's hand. The carriage passed through the gates of the inner wall and moved slowly on to the crowded Tirzian Way. The people of the walled city had risen early that day, anxious to welcome the unfortunate fugitives from their sister city, eager to offer both food and shelter to friends and strangers alike. Everyone wanted to know more about the massive invasion force that was now advancing on their own homes. Throngs of worried and frightened people lingered uncertainly in the busy streets, talking anxiously among themselves, pausing to stare curiously as the carriage escorted by the palace guards rolled slowly past them. A few pointed or waved in astonishment as they recognized the slim girl who rode within, the dark, rust-colored hair shadowing her worn and drawn face. Menyon sat close to her, suddenly aware once more of the pain stabbing in quick twinges from his battered feet. He was grateful now that it was not necessary to walk any farther. The great city seemed to rush past him in short flashes of buildings and overpasses, all crowded with men, women, and children of all ages and descriptions, all rushing somewhere in noisy waves. The Highlander breathed deeply and settled back in the cushioned seat, his hands still holding Shirl's, his eyes closing momentarily as he allowed his tired mind to drift into the gray haze that clouded his thoughts. The city and its multitudes faded quickly into a faint drone of sound that soothed him, lulled him quietly toward the comfort of sleep. He was on the verge of slipping away entirely when a gentle shaking of his shoulder brought him quickly around, and his eyes opened to view the distant palace grounds as the carriage mounted the wide avenue of the Sendic Bridge. The youth gazed appreciatively down on the sunlit parks and gardens beneath the bridge, their tree-shaded lawns dotted with color from seemingly countless carefully tended flowerbeds. Everything lay in peace and warmth, as if this sector of the city were somehow an unrelated part of the turbulent human existence that had created it. At the other end of the bridge, the gates to the palace swung open in reception. Menyon peered ahead in disbelief. The entire entryway was lined with soldiers of the palace guard, all immaculately dressed in their black uniforms, crested by the emblem of the falcon, all standing stiffly at attention. From within the enclosure, trumpets announced the arrival of the coach and its passengers. The Highlander was astonished. They were being accorded the formal welcome normally reserved for only the greatest leaders of the four lands, a policy strictly observed by the few monarchies remaining in the vast Southland. The pomp and display of a full military salute clearly indicated that Palance Buckhanna was determined to ignore not only the circumstances under which they had arrived, but the inviolate tradition of centuries. "They must be mad. Absolutely mad," the angered Southlander stormed. "What does he think this is? We are besieged by an invading army, and he turns out the troops for a dress parade."
"Minion, be careful what you say to him. We must be patient if we are to be of any use to Balinor."
Shirl gripped his shoulder and faced him for a moment, smiling quickly in warning.
"Remember as well that he loves me, misguided though he may be. He was a good man once, and he is Balinor's brother still."
Impatient and impulsive as always, Menyon nevertheless realized that she was right. There was nothing to be gained by showing he was angered with the foolish pageant, and he was well advised to go along with the prince's whims until Balinor was located and freed. He sat quietly back in the coach as it entered the palace gates, passing in slow review before the rows of expressionless soldiers that formed the elite of the king's personal guard. The fanfares continued to roll from all sides, and a small squad of cavalry wheeled in precise formation about the courtyard for the benefit of the new arrivals. Then the carriage came to a gentle halt, and the big figure of the new ruler of Calahorn appeared at the coach door, the broad face smiling in nervous delight.
"Cheryl. Cheryl, I thought I would never see you again."
He reached into the coach and helped the slim girl from the small enclosure, holding her close to him for a moment and stepping away to view her once more.
I really thought I had lost you."
Burning quietly, an impassive minion helped himself from the carriage, stepping down beside them, smiling faintly as Palance turned to greet him.
"Prince of Lee, you are indeed welcome in my kingdom," the big man greeted the lean Highlander, reaching warmly for his hand. "You have done me a very great service. Anything I have is yours. Anything. We shall be great friends, you and I. Great friends. It has been so long since..."
He trailed off sharply, looking intensely at the Highlander, suddenly lost in thought. His speech was stilted and nervous, almost as if he weren't quite sure of what he was saying at any one point. If he weren't completely mad already, Menion thought quickly, he was certainly very ill.
"I'm very pleased to be in Tirsis," he responded, "although I wish the circumstances could have been more pleasant for all concerned."
"You mean my brother, of course?"
The question shot out as the other snapped awake again, his face flushed. Menion started momentarily in surprise.
"Palance. He means the invasion of the Northlanders." "The burning of Kern," Cheryl interposed quickly.
"Yes. Kern."
Again he trailed off, this time looking anxiously about as if someone were missing. Menion glanced about uneasily, realizing that the mystic Stenman was strangely absent. According to Cheryl and Jeanne Senpre, the prince never went anywhere without his advisor. Quickly he caught Cheryl's watchful eye.
"Is there something wrong, my lord?"
Menion used the formal address to catch the other's instant attention, smiling quickly in reassurance that he was a concerned friend prepared to help. The deception brought unexpected results.
"You can help me. And this kingdom, Menion Lee," Palance responded quickly. "My brother seeks to be king in my place. He would have me killed.
My advisor Stenman has saved me from this, but there are other enemies all around.
You and I must be friends. We must stand together against those who seek to take my throne, to bring harm to this lovely woman whom you have returned to me. I cannot talk with Stenman the way I would talk with a friend, but you... I could talk with you."
Like a small child, he gazed eagerly at the amazed Menion Lee, awaiting his reply. A sudden feeling of pity for this son of Ruel Buckhanna swept over the Highlander, and he truly wished there was something he could do to help the unfortunate man. Smiling sadly, he nodded his agreement.
"I knew you would stand with me," the other exclaimed excitedly, laughing in delight. "We are both men of royal blood, and that binds us closely. You and I shall be great friends, Minion. But now, you must rest."
He seemed to recall suddenly that his palace corps were still standing stiffly at parade attention, waiting patiently for the prince to give the order for dismissal. With a sharp wave of his hand, the new ruler of Calahorn led his two guests toward the Buckhanna home, nodding to the commander of his personal guard as they passed to signal that his soldiers could be dispersed for regular duty. The trio passed into the entryway of the ancient home, where a number of servants stood waiting to escort the guests to their rooms. Pausing briefly once more, the host turned to his guests, bending close to whisper.
My brother is locked in the dungeons beneath us. You need not be afraid. He stared meaningfully at them for a moment, glancing quickly at the curious servants who waited respectfully in the background. He has friends everywhere, you know. Both Menyon and Shirl nodded because it was expected of them. He won't escape from the dungeons then. Menyon pursued the matter a bit further. He tried last night. With his friends. Palance smiled with satisfaction. But we caught them, and trapped them. Trapped them in the dungeon forever. Stenman is there now. You must meet him. Again he straightened up with the thought left unspoken, his attention given over to the servants, several of whom he beckoned to his side. He crisply directed them to escort his friends to their quarters where they could bathe themselves and don fresh clothing before joining him for breakfast. It was still only about an hour after dawn, and the refugees from Kern had not eaten since the previous night. Menyon needed medical treatment for his hastily bandaged wounds, and the house physician stood ready to change the dressings and apply fresh medicines. He needed rest, too, but that could wait. The small party started down one long hallway when suddenly a distracted voice called after Shirl, and the new ruler of Callahorn came after them, approaching the wondering girl with hesitant steps, finally stopping before her and quickly embracing her. Menyon kept his face averted, but their words were clear. "You must not go away from me again, Shirl." It was a command. Not a request, though the words were softly spoken. Your new home must be in Tirsis. As my wife. There was a long moment of silence. Palance, I think we... Shirl's voice shook as she tried to interpose a quiet explanation. No, say nothing. No discussion is necessary now. Not now. Palance interrupted quickly. Later, when we are alone, when you are rested, there will be time. You know I love you. I always have. And you have loved me, I know. Again the long moment of silence, and then Shirl was walking quickly past Menyon, forcing the servants to dash ahead in order to lead the way to the guest quarters. The Highlander quickly came up beside the beautiful girl, not daring to reach for her while his host stood silently watching them move down the hallway. Shirl's face was lowered, shaded by the long red hair, the slim, bronzed hands clasped tightly before her. Neither spoke as the servants led them down the wide corridor to their rooms in the west wing of the ancient home. They separated briefly while Menyon allowed the persistent physician to treat his wounds and wrap them in fresh bandages. Clean clothing lay on the huge four-posted bed, and a hot bath stood waiting. But a distraught Menyon ignored them both. Quickly he slipped from his room into the empty hallway. He knocked softly, pushed open the door to Shirl's room, and entered. She rose slowly from the bed as he closed the heavy wooden door, then ran quickly to him, her arms encircling and holding him tightly to her. They stood in silence for several minutes, just holding each other, feeling the warm life flow quickly through their bodies, knotting and winding in unbreakable ties. Softly Menyon stroked the dark red tresses, gently pressing the beautiful face close against his chest. She depended on him. The thought flashed with relief through his numbed mind. When her own strength, her own courage had faltered, she had turned to him, and Menyon realized that he loved her desperately. It was very strange that it should happen now, when their world seemed destined to crumble about them and death stood waiting in the shadows. Yet Menyon's turbulent life of the past several weeks had drawn him from one frightening struggle to the next, each a battle for survival that seemed senseless in mortal terms, and found its logic solely in the strange legend of the mystic sword of Shannara and the warlock lord. In those terrible days since Cullhaven, life had raged around him like a battle, and he had surged directionless through its center. His deep friendship and love for Shay, and his now broken companionship with the members of the company that had journeyed to Perrinor and beyond, had provided a faint sense of stability, an indication that something constant would remain while the rest of the world rushed away. Then unexpectedly, he had found Shurul Ravenlock, and the fast pace of events and dangers shared in those past few days, combined with a totally predictable meshing of personal needs, had drawn and bound them inextricably to one another. Menyon closed his eyes and pressed her closer. Palance had been helpful in at least one respect. He had told them that Balinor and probably the others with him were imprisoned in the dungeons somewhere beneath the palace. Evidently one escape had already failed, and Menyon was determined that he would not make any mistakes. Quietly he conversed with Shurul, trying to decide what their next step should be. If Palance insisted on keeping Shurul close to him in order to assure her protection, her movement would be severely restricted. A worse threat was the prince's obsession with marrying her in the false belief that she truly loved him. Palance Buckhanna seemed poised on the brink of total madness, his sanity precariously balanced. It could be tipped at any moment, and if that should happen while Balinor was his prisoner... Menyon paused mentally, aware that time did not permit speculation of what might happen tomorrow. By then it would make little difference because the Northland invasion force would be at the gates, and it would be too late for anyone to do anything. Balinor had to be freed now. Menyon had a strong ally in Janice Senpre, but the palace was secured by the special black-garbed soldiers who served only the ruler, and at the moment, it appeared they served Palance Buckhanna. No one seemed to know what had become of the old king. He had not been seen for weeks. Evidently he was unable to move from his sickbed, yet there was only his son's word for that. And his son relied on the word of the strange mystic Stenman. Shurul had once remarked that she had never seen Palance alone for more than a few moments without his advisor close at hand. Yet when they arrived from Kern, Stenman had been nowhere in sight. This was peculiar, especially since it was common knowledge that Stenman had made himself the real power behind the unstable prince. Shurul's father had stated in the council chambers of Kern that the evil mystic seemed to possess some strange hold over the younger son of Ruul Buckhanna. If only Menyon could discover what that power was, for he was sure that the mystic was the key to the prince's unbalanced behavior. But there was no time left. He would have to do the best he could with what little he knew now. When he left Shurul and returned to his own room, ready now for that hot bath and a clean change of clothing, a plan for freeing Balinor was already forming in his mind. He was still filling in the details when the bath was finished and there was a knock on the door. Slipping into a robe his host had furnished, he crossed the room and opened the door. One of the palace servants had brought him the Sword of Lee. Smiling gratefully, he thanked the man and dropped the precious weapon on the bed, recalling that he had deposited it on the seat in the carriage during his ride to the palace and forgotten to remove it. His mind wandered briefly as he dressed, remembering proudly the service that battle-worn implement had seen. He had been through so much since Shay had appeared in Lee those many weeks ago. It might have been a lifetime for any man. Pausing momentarily, he reflected sadly on his missing friend and wondered for the thousandth time if the little Veilman were still alive. He should not be in Tirsis, he chided himself in bitter recrimination. Shay had depended on him for protection, but it appeared that his trust had been badly misplaced. Menyon had repeatedly allowed himself to be governed by the wishes of Al-Anon, and each time his conscience had warned him that he was somehow failing his companion by following the druid's counsel. He felt deeply angered at the thought that he had ignored his clear responsibility to the Veilmen, and yet the choices that had brought him to Tirsis had been his own. There were others besides Shay who desperately needed him. Crossing the spacious bedroom in measured steps, still lost in thought, he dropped heavily to the welcome softness of the large bed, his outstretched hand coming to rest on the cool metal of his sword. He fingered it lightly as he lay back wearily and pondered the problems facing him. Cheryl's frightened face lingered in his mind, her eyes searching Menyon's own. She was very important to him. He could not leave her now in order to resume the search for Shay, no matter what the consequences might be. It was a bitter choice to make, if indeed there was any real choice at all, for his duty ran beyond those two single lives to those of Balinor and his imprisoned comrades, and ultimately to those of the people of Callahorn. It would be for Al-Anon and Flick to find and rescue the missing Veilman if he were still alive. So much depended on them all, he thought absently, his tired mind and body already drifting toward a much-needed sleep. They could only pray for success. Pray and wait. He hovered on the brink of slumber and then softly dropped off. A moment later, his sleeping mind jerked sharply, and he was instantly awake. There may have been a slight noise, or perhaps only a highly keyed sixth sense, but whatever it was snapped him back from a sleep that would have ended in his death. He lay motionless on the great bed as his listening ears caught a faint scraping sound from the far wall, and through the slits of his eyelids he saw a portion of a tapestry ripple with movement. A part of the heavy stone behind the tapestry seemed to push outward, and a bent, scarlet-cloaked figure slid noiselessly into view. Menyon forced himself to continue breathing in measured intervals, although his heart was beating wildly, urging him to leap from the bed and seize the mysterious intruder. The cloaked figure moved silently across the bedroom floor, the unfamiliar face glancing quickly about the room and then turning back to the Highlander's sprawled form. The intruder was only several feet from the bed when a lean hand slipped beneath the scarlet cloak and emerged, gripping a long, wicked dagger. Menyon's outstretched hand rested loosely on the sword of Lee, but still he did not move. He waited a moment longer until the attacker was within about a yard of the bed, the dagger held at waist level. Then, with the lightning speed of a cat, he struck. The lean body whipped upward and toward the startled intruder, one hand clenching the sword still sheathed in its leather scabbard as the flat of the blade snapped sharply around at the man's unprotected face, striking it in a stinging slap. The mysterious figure reeled backward, the dagger raised defensively. The sword struck a second time, and the weapon clattered to the floor as the numbed fingers of the attacker clenched suddenly in pain. Menyon did not pause, but threw himself at the scarlet figure, his own weight dragging the struggling man to the floor where he quickly pinned him, twisting one arm sharply as his fingers closed tightly about the windpipe. "Speak up, assassin," Menyon growled menacingly. "No, wait, you've made a mistake. I'm not an enemy. Please, I can't breathe." The voice choked sharply, and the man's breath rasped in ragged gulps as the Highlander's grip remained unaltered and the cold, dark eyes surveyed the face of his captive. To his knowledge, Menyon had never seen the man. The face was pinched and sharp, framed by a small black beard and lined with pain. Even as he studied the teeth clenched in anger and the eyes burning with hatred, the Highlander instinctively knew there had been no mistake made. Stepping quickly to one side, he jerked the intruder to his feet, one hand still firmly fastened on the scrawny neck. "Tell me about my mistake, then. You have about a minute before I cut your tongue out and turn you over to the guards."
He released his grip on the man's throat, his hand dropping to seize the front of the scarlet tunic. Tossing his sword on the bed, he quickly picked up the fallen dagger, holding it ready should his attacker attempt anything further.
"This was a gift, Prince of Lee. Merely a gift from the king."
The voice broke slightly as the fellow struggled to regain his composure.
"The king wanted to show his gratitude, and I came through another door so as not to disturb your sleep."
He paused as if waiting for something, the sharp eyes riveted on the Highlander's own. He wasn't waiting to see if his story would be believed. It was something else, almost as if he were expecting Minion to see something more. The Prince of Lee jerked him sharply, snapping the lean face close to his own.
"That is unquestionably the weakest tale I have ever heard. Who are you, assassin?"
The eyes burned into his own with intense hatred.
"I am Stenman, the king's personal advisor."
He seemed to have suddenly regained his senses now.
"I did not lie to you. The dagger was a present from Palance Buckhanner, which I was asked to bring to you. I meant you no harm. If you do not believe me, go to the king. Ask him."
There was a hint of confidence in the man's voice that convinced Minion that Palance would affirm his advisor's story, whether it was true or not. He had in his grasp the most dangerous man in Callahorn, the evil mystic who had become the power behind the monarchy, the one man he had to eliminate if Balinor were to be rescued. Why the man had chosen to attack him when they had never met was something he did not understand, but it was clear that if he released him now, or even took him before Palance in an effort to discredit him, the Highlander would lose the initiative and place his own life in danger again. Roughly, he threw the mystic into a nearby chair and ordered him to remain motionless. The man sat quietly, his eyes drifting aimlessly about the room, the hands moving nervously to stroke the small, pointed beard. Minion eyed him absently, his mind carefully pondering the choices open to him. It took him only a moment to decide. He could no longer bide his time, waiting for the right moment to free his friends. The decision had been taken out of his hands.
"On your feet, mystic, or whatever you prefer to call yourself."
The evil face stared menacingly at him, and in fury, Minion yanked the man violently up from the chair.
"I ought to dispose of you without further consideration. The people of Callahorn would be much the better for it. But for the time being, I need your services. Take me to the dungeons where Balinor and the others are imprisoned. Now."
Stenman's eyes went wide in sudden shock at the mention of Balinor.
"How could you know of him? A traitor to this kingdom,"
the mystic exclaimed in astonishment.
"The king himself has ordered his brother imprisoned until his natural death, Prince of Lee. And even I—"
His sentence ended in a strangled gasp as Minion grabbed him roughly by the throat and began to squeeze. Stenman's face turned slowly purple.
"I didn't ask for excuses or explanations. Just take me to him."
Once more he tightened his iron grip, and finally the gasping captive nodded violently his acquiescence. Minion released him with a snap of his wrist, and the nearly throttled man fell dizzily to one knee. Quickly, the Highlander slipped out of his robe and into his clothing, strapping on the sword and shoving the dagger into his belt. For an instant, he thought about arousing Shirl in the next room, but quickly discarded that idea. His plan was dangerous enough. There was no reason to risk her life as well. If he succeeded in freeing his friends, there would be time enough to come back for her. He turned to his captive, drawing the dagger from his belt and holding it up for the other to see.
"The present that you were so kind to bring me will be returned to you, assassin, if you attempt to trick or betray me in any way," he warned in his most menacing tone of voice. So don't try to be clever. When we leave this room, you will take me down the back corridors and stairs to the prison where Balinor and his companions are held. Don't try to alarm the guards. You won't be fast enough. If you doubt anything I've told you, then understand this. I was sent to this city by Alanon. Stenman seemed to go suddenly white at the mention of the giant druid, and undisguised fear shot into his widening eyes. Apparently cowed into obeying his captor, the scarlet mystic moved silently toward the bedroom door, and Menyon fell into step directly behind him, the dagger back in his belt, with one hand gripping the hilt. Time was the all-important factor now. He had to act quickly, freeing Balinor and the other imprisoned members of the Company of Friends and seizing the deranged palace before the members of the palace guard were alerted. Then a quick message to Jonas Senpre would bring to their aid those still loyal to Balinor, and the power of the monarchy would be restored without a battle. Already the massive Northland army would be mobilizing on the grasslands above the island of Kern, preparing to move on Tirsis. If the Border Legion could be reassembled and deployed quickly enough that day, there was a chance the invader might be stopped on the north shore of the Myrmidon. It would be a nearly impossible task to cross that flooded river with a defensive force holding the opposite bank, and it would take the enemy several days to manage a flanking maneuver. More than enough time for the armies of Eventine to reach them. Menyon knew it would all depend on the next few minutes. The two men stepped cautiously into the hallway beyond the room. Menyon quickly glanced in both directions for any sign of the black-garbed sentries, but the hall was deserted, and the Highlander motioned Stenman ahead. The mystic reluctantly led his captor toward the inner rooms of the central palace, winding his way along the corridors that ran to the rear of the ancient building, carefully avoiding the occupied rooms. Twice they passed members of the palace guard, but each time Stenman withheld any comment or greeting, his dark face lowered in grim determination. Through the latticework of the castle windows, Menyon could see the gardens that decorated the grounds of the Buckhanna home, the sunlight falling warmly on the brightly colored flowers. It was already mid-morning, and before much longer the normal gathering of visitors and business personages would begin. There had been no sign of Palin's Buckhanna, and Menyon was hopeful that the prince was preoccupied with other matters. As the two walked slowly down the hallways, the sound of voices was distinctly audible in all directions. Servants began to appear in increasing numbers, moving busily about their assigned tasks. When they passed, they pointedly ignored Stenman and his apparent companion, a good indication that they neither liked nor trusted the mystic. None questioned their presence, and at last they approached the massive doorway that led to the castle cellars. Two armed sentries were stationed before the door, and a huge metal bar now held the latches firmly in place. "Be careful what you say," Menyon cautioned in a sharp whisper as they neared the guards. They came to a slow halt before the massive cellar door, the watchful Highlander placing one hand in a leisurely manner on the hilt of the dagger as he stood close behind Stenman. The guards glanced curiously at him for a moment, then turned their attention to the king's advisor, who had begun to address them. "Open the door, guards. The Prince of Lee and I will inspect the wine cellar and the dungeons." "All persons are forbidden to enter this area by order of the king, my lord," the guard to the right stated pointedly. "I am here by order of the king," Stenman shouted angrily, causing Menyon to give him a warning nudge. "Sentry, this is the king's personal counselor, not an enemy of the kingdom," the Highlander pointed out with a deceiving smile. "We are on a tour of the palace, and since it was I who rescued the king's betrothed, it was his belief that I might recognize the lady's abductors. Now, if necessary, I shall disturb the king and bring him down here." He trailed off meaningfully, praying that the guards would be sufficiently forewarned of Palance's irrational behavior to think twice about calling him down. The guards hesitated momentarily, then nodded quietly, released the latches on the door and stepped aside, swinging the massive portal open to reveal the stone stairway leading downward. Stenman again led the way without comment. Apparently he had decided to follow Menyon's instructions to the letter, but the cautious Highlander knew that the mystic was no fool. If Balinor were successfully freed and restored to command of the Border Legion, then his own power over the throne of Calahorn would be finished. He would undoubtedly attempt something, but the time and the place had not yet come. The heavy door closed quietly behind them, and they began their descent into the torchlit cellar. Menyon saw the trap door in the center of the cellar floor almost immediately. The guards had not bothered to conceal it a second time with the wine barrels, but had fastened a series of iron bars and latches across the stone slab, effectively preventing anyone imprisoned below from breaking free. Although Menyon could not have known, the prisoners had not been returned to their cells following the aborted escape attempt earlier that same morning. Instead, they had been left to roam in the darkness of the dungeon corridors. Two guards were stationed next to the sealed opening, their attention now focused on the two men who had just been admitted from the palace. Menyon saw a plate of cheese and bread resting half-eaten on one of the wine barrels, and two cups of wine placed next to a half-drained flask. They had been drinking. The Highlander smiled slightly. As the two reached the stone flooring, Menyon pretended to glance about the wine cellar in great interest, beginning a jovial conversation with the silent Stenman. The guards rose slowly and came to attention at the sight of the king's advisor, who was looking decidedly grim about something. The Highlander knew they had been caught off balance by this unexpected visit, and he decided to make the most of it. "I see what you mean, my lord." He glowered fiercely at the mystic as they drew near to the sentries. "These men have been drinking while on duty. Suppose the prisoners should have escaped while these men lay in a drunken stupor. The king must be told of this as soon as we have finished our business here." The guards turned pale with fear at mention of the king. "My lord, you are mistaken," the one pleaded hastily. "We were only taking a little wine with our breakfast. We have not been lax." "The king should decide that," Menyon cut him off with a wave of his hand. "But the king will not listen." Stenman glowered in fury at the deception, but the guards misunderstood and quickly assumed he meant to have them punished. The mystic tried to say something, but Menyon moved quickly in front of him, as if in an effort to restrain his advance toward the unfortunate guards, drawing the dagger and holding it close to the man's unprotected chest. "Yes, of course they are probably lying," Menyon continued without changing his tone of voice. "Still, the king is a busy man, and I hate to bother him with such little problems. Perhaps a word of warning to them." He glanced back at the guards, who nodded dumbly, grasping at any chance to avoid Stenman's wrath. Like everyone else in the kingdom, they were frightened of the power the strange mystic possessed over Palance, and were more than eager to avoid angering him. "Very good, then. You have had your warning." Menyon sheathed the dagger and turned back to the still shaken sentries. "Now open the dungeon door, and bring up the prisoners." He stood close to Stenman, glancing at him quickly in warning. The dark face did not seem to see him anymore, the eyes staring vacantly at the stone slab that barred their entry to the dungeons beneath. The sentries had not moved, but were glancing at each other in new desperation. "My lord, the king has forbidden anyone to see the prisoners. For any reason," the one guard gulped at last. "I cannot bring them out of the dungeon." "So you would bar the king's advisor and his personal guest?" Menyon did not hesitate.
He had expected this. Then we have no choice but to call the king down here.
That was all it took. There was no further deliberation as the sentries raced to the stone slab, quickly sliding back the latches and bolts. Bracing themselves, the guards pulled back on the iron ring, and the trapdoor swung ponderously upward and fell back heavily against the stone flooring, leaving a gaping black hole. Holding their swords ready, the sentries called down into the darkness, commanding the prisoners to come out. There were footsteps on the ancient stone stairway as Menion waited expectantly at Stenman's side, his own sword now drawn. His free hand held the mystic's arm tightly, and in a sharp whisper he warned the lean advisor not to speak or move. Then Balinor's broad form appeared from out of the pit, closely followed by the elven brothers and the durable Hendel, his own attempt to rescue his friends thwarted only hours earlier. They did not see Menion at first. Quickly the Highlander stepped forward, still holding the silent Stenman.
"That's it. Keep them moving. Keep them together. Such men must be watched carefully. They are always dangerous."
The wearied prisoners glanced over abruptly, only thinly masking their astonishment on seeing the Prince of Lee. Menion winked quickly behind the guards' backs, and the four captives turned away, only the slow smile on Dale's young face betraying the sudden joy they were experiencing at the sight of their old friend. They were out of the pit now and standing quietly a few feet from the guards, who stood with their backs to the Highlander. But before Menion could act, the heretofore passive Stenman wrested his whip-like form free from his captor's iron grip and sprang aside to shout a quick warning to the unsuspecting sentries.
"Traitor! Guards, it's a trick!"
He was never able to finish. As the distracted sentries whirled about, Menion leaped cat-like at the fleeing mystic, throwing him violently to the stone floor. The soldiers realized their mistake too late. The four prisoners sprang into action, closing the short space of ground separating them from their jailers and disarming them before they could recover. Within seconds, the guards were subdued, quickly bound and gagged, and dragged into a corner of the cellar where they were hidden from sight. A thoroughly beaten Stenman was yanked unceremoniously to his feet to face his new captors. Menion glanced anxiously at the closed door at the top of the cellar stairway, but no one appeared. Apparently the shout had gone unheeded. Balinor and the others came over to him with smiles of gratitude on their tired faces, clapping him on the back and shaking his hand once again.
"Menion Lee, we owe you more than we can ever hope to give back."
The giant borderman gripped his hand tightly.
"I did not think we would ever see you again. Where is Alanon?"
Quickly Menion explained how he had left Alanon and Flick concealed above the camp of the Northland army, and come to Callahorn to warn of the impending advance against Tirsis. Pausing momentarily to gag Stenman in the event the evil advisor should attempt to call out another warning to the guards posted outside the cellar door, the Highlander told of rescuing Shurl Ravenlock, fleeing to Kern and subsequently to the walls of Tirsis, after the island city was besieged and destroyed. His friends listened grimly until he had finished.
"Whatever else may come out of this, Highlander," Hendel declared quietly, "you have proved yourself this day, and we shall never forget it."
"The Border Legion must be reformed and sent to hold the Myrmidon immediately," Balinor cut in quickly. "We must get word to the lower city. Then we must find my father. And my brother. But I want to secure the palace and the army without a battle. Menion, can we trust Janus Senpre to come to our aid if we call for him?"
"He is loyal to you and to the king."
Menion nodded affirmatively.
"You must get a message to him while we remain here," the Prince of Callahorn continued, pacing over toward the captive Stenman. "Once he arrives with help, we should have no trouble. My brother will be left without support."
"But what of my father?"
Towering over the dark form of the mystic, he removed the gag from the captive's mouth and stared coldly down at him. Stenman met his gaze briefly, his own eyes furtive and filled with hate. The mystic knew he was beaten if Palance was captured and removed as monarch of Callahorn, and he was becoming increasingly desperate as the end drew near and his plans began to break apart. Standing with the Elven brothers and Hendel as Balinor confronted the mysterious captive, Minion found himself wondering what the man had hoped to gain by encouraging Palance to take the steps he had. Certainly it was no mystery why he had supported the distraught and unstable prince as the new king of Callahorn. His own position was assured with Balinor's brother ruling. But why had he encouraged the disbanding of the Border Legion when he knew that an invading army was threatening to overrun the little Southland kingdom and put an end to its enlightened monarchy? Why had he gone to such pains to imprison Balinor and to secrete his father in a distant wing of the palace when they could have been quietly disposed of? And why had he tried to kill Menyn Lee, a man he had never met before? Stenman, your rule over this land and its people and your domination of my brother are over, Balinor declared with cold determination. Whether or not you will ever see the light of another day depends on what you do from now until the time I am again in command of the city. What have you done with my father? There was a long moment of silence as the mystic looked desperately around, the dark face ashen with fear.
He is in the north wing. In the tower.
The answer was in a whisper. If he has been harmed, mystic. Balinor turned away sharply, leaving the terrified man momentarily forgotten. Stenman shrank away against one wall, gazing after the tall figure of the borderman. One hand came up nervously to stroke the small, pointed beard. Minion watched him, almost in pity, and then suddenly something clicked in his mind. An image flashed sharply. A memory of a scene he had witnessed several days earlier on the banks of the Myrmidon north of the island of Kern, as he had lain concealed on a small hillock overlooking a windy beachhead. That same mannerism. The stroking of a small, pointed beard. Now he knew exactly what Stenman was attempting to do. His face turned to a mask of rage, and he started forward, brushing past Balinor as if he wasn't even there.
You were the man on the beach. The kidnapper, he accused in undisguised fury. You tried to kill me because you thought I would recognize you as the man who had kidnapped Shurl, the man who turned her over to the Northlanders. You traitor. You intended to betray us all. To turn the city over to the warlock lord.
Heedless of the cries of his companions, he rushed toward the now hysterical mystic, who somehow managed to evade his initial lunge and break away toward the cellar stairway. Minion was after him with a bound, the gleaming sword of his father raised to strike. Halfway up the stone steps he caught him, one hand jerking the dark form about as the man shrieked in terror. Yet the end did not come, for as the sword drew back and Minion held the maddened Stenman tightly against the stone wall, the massive door to the ancient cellar suddenly swung open, the thrust of the pole slamming the iron-bound wood back against the wall with a jarring crash. Framed in the entryway stood the broad figure of Palance Buckhanna. Chapter 29. For a moment, no one moved. Even the terrified Stenman had gone limp against the cellar wall, his dark face staring blankly at the silent form that waited statue-like at the top of the ancient stairway. The lined face of the prince was drained of color, and the eyes reflected a curious mixture of anger and confusion. Resolutely, Menyon Lee met those searching eyes, his sword arm lowering slowly, his own hatred fading with the sudden turn of events. Their lives might all be forfeited if he didn't act fast. Roughly, he yanked Stenman to his feet and threw him disdainfully toward the prince.
"Here is your traitor, Palance, the real enemy of Callahorn. This is the man who gave Churl Ravenlock to the Northlanders. This is the man who would give Tirsis to the warlock lord.
My lord, you've come just in time." The mystic had recovered his wits enough to cut Menyon off before any more damage could be done. He stumbled fearfully to his feet and rushed up the stairs, throwing himself at Palance's feet and pointing down at the company of friends.
"I discovered them escaping. I was running to warn you. The Highlander is a friend of Balinor. He came to kill you."
The words were tumbling out of the man's mouth in undisguised hatred as he groped at his benefactor's tunic and raised himself slowly to his side.
"They would have killed me, and then you, my lord. Can't you see what is happening?"
Menyon fought down the urge to rush up the steps and cut the evil mystic's lying tongue out, forcing himself to remain outwardly calm, his gaze riveted on that of the stunned Palance Buckhanna.
"You have been betrayed by this man, Palance," he continued evenly. "He has poisoned your heart and your mind. He has sapped you of your will to think for yourself. He cares nothing for you. He cares nothing for this land, which he has so cheaply sold to the enemy that has already destroyed Kern."
Stenman roared in fury, but Menyon continued in stony disregard.
"You once said we would be friends, and friends must have trust for each other. Do not be deceived now, or your kingdom will surely be lost."
At the bottom of the stairway, Balinor and his friends watched silently, afraid that any distraction might break the strange spell Menyon Lee was weaving, for Palance was still listening, his clouded mind struggling to break the wall of confusion surrounding it. Slowly he stepped forward on the landing, closing the door quietly behind him and brushing past Stenman as if he hadn't seen him. His advisor hesitated in confusion, glancing uncertainly at the cellar door as if debating the wisdom of attempting to flee. But he was not yet prepared to accept defeat, and he whirled quickly, catching Palance by the arm and thrusting his lean face next to the man's ear.
"Are you mad? Are you as insane as some say, my king?" he whispered venomously. "Will you throw everything away now? Give it all back to your brother? Was he meant to be king? Or you? This is all a lie. The Prince of Lee is a friend to Alanon."
Palance turned toward him slightly, his eyes widening.
"Yes, Alanon."
Stenman knew he had struck a nerve and was determined to pursue it.
"Who do you think seized your betrothed from her home in Kern? This man, who speaks of friendship, was part of the kidnapping. It was all a ruse to get inside the palace and then assassinate you. You were to be killed."
Below the stairway, Hendel took a step forward, but Balinor put out a restraining hand. Menyon stood quietly, knowing that any sudden move now would only confirm Stenman's charges. He directed a withering glance at the wily mystic, turning quickly back to Palance and shaking his head.
"He is a traitor. He belongs to the warlock lord."
Palance took several steps down the stairway, glancing briefly at Menyon.